William Henry, my guest tonight on Coast to Coast. William, I don't know why, but I seem to be obsessed with this Stargate, only because of the possibilities of what it can do and where you can go. Do you consider it a time machine?
Yes. That's a very good way to characterize it, most certainly. Because a person can enter the Stargate, travel to a distant place within the cosmos, and come back with very little time having expired on Earth. And it is also theoretically possible that it can take us back in time as well. So it's you could definitely characterize it as a time machine.
Now, do you think if we find it, we might be able to reverse engineer it and build something a little more technical with it?
Well, that's the idea here, is that this device that I'm describing, let's just call it a pillar or an antenna, because that's what the ancients called it. They said that the immortals dwelled at the place where this pillar was located because of the energy that emanated from within it. It's also technically a particle accelerator. And physicists tell us that this is the key to stargates and time travel. The thing is that we just don't have the technology right now to develop a particle accelerator of the power that's being described in these stories. I mean, we need a particle accelerator that's millions upon millions of times more powerful than what we're capable of developing right now. But I hold to the idea that, and this is a tip off from Dr. Carl Sagan, who described the civilization. Actually, it was Dr. Kip Thorne, an associate of Sagan, who described the civilization that would be capable of developing this technology as arbitrarily advanced, which means that this is a civilization that's going to think outside of the box of where we're presently thinking and might have a different idea about how to approach this.
Precisely, though, where did it come from?
Where did the technology come from?
Yeah.
Well, if you follow the thesis of Zechariah Sitchin, it came from the Nibiru, that the Anunnaki brought it here with them. And that's quite possible. It may even have just simply come out of divine consciousness itself. The reason I suggest that is because I've found the blueprint for this, or what I consider to be a blueprint for this device, in numerous cultures, Sumerian, Egyptian. I found it in Chinese artwork from the 2nd century A.D. It appears to be something that is within us that we're almost compelled as humans to actually build. And the interesting twist on this is that the blueprints for this device are quite strikingly similar to the energetic or spiritual blueprints of the human body. And my speculation has been is that when Ea or Enki came to Earth and designed the human body as a manufacturing plant, or to use John Lear's term, as a container for the blue stones that enable this kind of interdimensional travel, that he designed the human body based upon the blueprints for this device, as if there's a one-to-one relationship between humanity and the stargates of the gods. And in fact, when we go into the book of Genesis, we find that that's exactly the story, because what happened after the fall of Adam and Eve? The gate to Eden is closed by Yahweh, and a flaming sword is placed in there guarding that gate, with cherubim on either side of the gate. And all of human quest has been a quest to retrieve the secrets of that gate and to re-enter Eden,
mm-hmm.
which likely isn't a patch of ground in southern Iraq, is more likely the billions upon billions of galaxies which inhabit the known universe.
Do you think the Stargate might have been part of the basis for the late Sagan's script, Contact?
Absolutely no doubt in my mind that Dr. Carl Sagan was operating from a blueprint provided to him by other authorities, let's call them Illuminati, mm-hmm. behind-the-scenes figures, who gave him the suggestion that you're going to have a blueprint for a device beamed down from Vega with a very interesting Nazi twist to it, and that this device is capable of opening up a hole in space through which a human being, Ellie, in the movie Contact, could be flushed through this transportation system. Now, the interesting thing about it is that Ellie goes in that movie to the center of our Milky Way galaxy, which is exactly where the ancient myths and legends of the Gateway suggest one would travel to. And when Ellie gets to that place, the character in the movie who plays her father remarks that we don't know who built this transportation system. It's just always been there.
Exactly. And they gave it to them, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
And in fact, Paul Davies, writing in Scientific American, said that stargates and wormholes may be a natural after effect of the Big Bang. They have always been there. And the other option is that these stargates or wormholes are created from subatomic matter. And what we need is this particle accelerator technology that will enable us to open the throat or mouth of such a wormhole so that a human could travel through it.
There's no question in my mind, William, that eventually we will be traveling in space that way.
I agree.
I don't know when, but I know we will be.
Yeah, and the thing that Sagan left out of the Contact story was what the ancient myths had said, is that travel by Stargate by a human will probably not take place in the present form that we're living within. That indeed there is a profound mental, spiritual, physical, and emotional transformation that is undergone preparatory to this experience. And we find that that is the teaching of numerous temple medical facilities throughout the ancient world, including Abydos in Egypt and also at the goddess Mary's temple in ancient Syria going back to 2200 BC.
Well, let's take the approach, as far-fetched as it might seem to many people, that Saddam Hussein had a Stargate, knew where one was, and is gone. Where is he? What? Where did he end up?
Well, given the timing, I would put him in the local neighborhood here and suggest he might have gone to Mars.
You mean in a physical way or in a spiritual way?
Well, it would have to be more than likely in a spiritual way. I'm just not sure that it would be in a physical manner, although it's quite possible, because remember, what we're dealing with here when I'm interpreting, for example, the Sumerian myths and legends presented by Zachariah Sitchin especially, is we're talking about technology and stories that represent what the Anunnaki had several thousand years ago.
You know, the New York Times will have in their paper tomorrow, William Henry, mythologist, says Saddam Hussein on Mars.
Yeah, well,
you want? I'll give you a second chance. You want to stick by that one?
I do want to stick by it. I mean, I would say, you want to be conducting your search on Mars. That's where it all leads.
Well, you never know. You never know. On your website. WilliamHenry.net, you have a very fascinating picture of a crop circle. Tell me about that.
Right. This is one of the most interesting crop circles I think I've ever seen of the thousands that have appeared within the past decade. This is one that shows three circles. You have some concentric rings in the center, and then there are two circles on either side of it. And what crop circle experts have maintained is that this glyph, which is called the Chilbolton glyph, and it appeared in August 2000, is quite possibly a glyph or a symbol representing the means by which crop circles may be made. And in fact, they label this the quantum entanglement crop circle, because it's considered to be a representation of what is essentially Stargate, or rather Star Trek beaming technology. On one level, it represents the concept of instant communication of states over a distance at another level.
And it is a very complicated looking crop circle in formation.
Right. And what is so fascinating about this crop circle is that it appeared in August of 2000, right next to the Chilbolton Observatory in England. 1 year later, another incredibly and even more enigmatic and powerful crop circle appeared in the very same field. This crop circle is a dead ringer for the 1974 Arecibo message that Dr. Carl Sagan and Dr. Frank Drake had conspired to send out into space. When the crop circle comes back to Earth, it is slightly modified in some very important ways. And this was a story that was widely reported in August of 2001, just before 9/11, and then conveniently disappeared. Because at the time, in August 2001, this was considered a possibility of first contact, that we had sent out this message in 1974,
mm-hmm.
and now it comes back in a modified form. And relevant to this crop circle that we're describing, one of the modifications that had been made to this crop circle concerned the method of communication that the alleged beings who created this crop circle used. And the method of communication was this very same crop circle that appeared 1 year earlier and represents the communication at a distance or quantum entanglement concept.
Do you believe there's a specific message behind this one?
Well, I do, because I go along with the crop circle experts that are saying that it encodes the method by which the circles are made. And it gives an idea of the technology of the, let's call them beings, whether they're human or of an alien form, that actually create these glyphs.
See, I just can't see how someone by hand could do this and nobody see them. I mean, that one looks pretty darn complicated, the brownish one.
Right. The bottom one, there's
two
images there.
Yeah.
The bottom one is not a crop circle.
That's a black and white picture of what?
It's a black and white picture from the 18th century from a tantric, an Indian document.
That's weird.
That is called Rose Apple Land, and what it signifies is it's a depiction of our universe. Now, what is interesting to me is that I have been mentioning here a particular pillar and that I described as an antenna.
Yeah.
This pillar is called the Pillar of Meru.
Which you believed also was on the Ark of the Covenant, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
This is a blueprint of the Ark of the Covenant.
And did you, if my memory serves me, did you say that you thought it was no longer on the Ark, wherever the Ark might be now?
Right.
Okay.
Yes. And what this 18th century tantric document represents, as well as what I think the Chilbolt and quantum entanglement crop circle represents, is a top-down view of a blueprint for the Meru pillar, the antenna that the Sumerians and the Egyptians said could drill holes in space.
When you uncover stuff like this, this information, what do you do with it? You know, I know you put it in these books. You've got a lot of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, do scientists get the information, and then what do they do with it?
I confer with as many possible peers as possible. And I have a readership of the Coast audience is absolutely astounding in terms of the knowledge base that is representative by this collective mind that we're all participating in. And so what I do is form it place it in the form of a question. Do you see a resemblance between this 18th century diagram and this 20th century crop circle? Almost 21st century crop circle, actually. And if the answer is yes, then we proceed. How are they similar? Well, they're strikingly similar in their layout and their design. And what does that mean? And so now I go back to the tantric document and say, well, what they say that this represents here is a place called Rose Apple Land that creates a particular energy, an energy of life. And what I find that's so compelling about this is the connection to the Ark of the Covenant that's inherent in this, and that is that the Ark held the manna, the dew, the food of life. And what we find is that in the Hebrew book, the Zohar, they describe the manna as the holy apples, and they describe the manna field as the field of holy apples. This is strikingly similar to what the tantric people are saying this diagram represents, Rose Apple Land, the land of the holy or spirit apples. And in fact, in the Zohar, they say that those who accumulated the manna received blessings, they received mercy, and they were called the reapers of the holy field, which is an absolute direct link to the crop circles in the fields in which they appear. So my bottom line here in suggesting this is that what we've got here appears to be a lead that we can follow up in terms of a technology by which the crop circles may be made.
You know, what this all points out to is just with regards to mythology and what might be happening on this planet, just how many just incredibly baffling events are ongoing at the same time. I mean, it's sometimes there are too many to count.
Right, absolutely. I mean, and that's why I try to focus and center it on the body, on how can we take this information and these baffling events and apply it to our daily lives so that we enhance our earthly existence, but ultimately can use this information to perpetuate our spiritual growth.
You've been investigating now for how many years, William?
Well, I started researching when I was in college. That goes back to 1982. And then I began lecturing and publishing in 1996.
Okay. Of all the things that you have worked on in your career, of all the things, is there one that continues to perplex you the most? One thing?
Well, it would have to be this pillar. In tracing it around, I've now written 10 books that are in and around this device, and I'm sure I can write another 30 and just scratch the surface on this technology.
You know, what I want to do in the remaining portion of this hour when we come back from the break is talk about your new book, Oracle of the Illuminati. When does that come out, by the way?
December 1st.
Okay. And how do you get that?
They can go to my website, williamhenry.net, or call 615-292-7863.
I'll always remember one of the first programs you did is we blew up your server.
And,
and now you're handling them quite well.
Yeah, we got that all fixed up.
You constantly update the website. You got a very nice one there. Your webmaster does a good job with it.
Yes, that's Demian at Revised Code. He's a great guy and works very hard for me. I really appreciate it.
The type of research that you do when you as investigative mythologist, do you ever get involved in the Greek mythology at all?
Well, I do in a surprising way because here in Nashville, where I live, we have a duplicate, accurate to an eighth of an inch, of the Parthenon from ancient Greece. So I literally have a book in stone right here in my backyard. I can walk to it.
And anything in that kind of mythology that ever surprised you?
Yeah, and that happened this summer. You know, Greek myth is bewildering. Zeus, you've got Athena, you've got Hermes, you've got Hephaestus, all these names, different legends and stories you got to keep track with. You need a scorecard when you're reading these books. Like, who are these people?
I say I go to a Greek restaurant here every once in a while, and Greek people in here, and that's all they talk about is mythology, and it fascinates them. They don't all believe in what might have come down, but they do all say one thing that I find very interesting, William, and they all believe that the perception of a certain level of a god, that something indeed might have happened on this planet, and it could have been extraterrestrial.
Well,
they all believe in God, which is a good thing.
Right.
But they believe that something happened on an extraterrestrial way on this planet.
Right, and that was the surprising thing that happened this summer, is when I made the connection that the Greek gods, Zeus and Hephaestus and so forth, they're simply renamed Anunnaki. That's all they are. Zeus is Enlil. Hephaestus is Ea or Enki. It goes on from there. And so once we can make the connection to something we already know, the story unfolds like a book. It's incredible.
Let's talk about the Illuminati when we come back, okay? William Henry, my guest. I'm George Norrie. Don't go away.
Sign up for StreamLink at www.coasttocoastam.com. And you can hear tonight's show over and over and over.
I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles and miles.